Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me and listening to my talk about hemp. Industrial hemp is now listed as a new crop, though we know it's historically very old. So I'm excited to tell you a little bit about what we've learned in the last 3 years as we've been able to grow it legally as a crop again. So I'm here representing the Rodale Institute. The Rodale Institute is a nonprofit research and education farm in Kutztown, Pennsylvania. And our founder, J.I. Rodale, wrote on a chalkboard in 1947 that healthy soil equals healthy food equals healthy people. And all of our research is about finding solutions providing solutions-based research to help farmers practice organic management and make this connection from the soil to the food that they're eating and ultimately to their human health. And we think that hemp can fit really well into that system that we've been working on for the last 80 years. And so we know that industrial hemp can be used for food, for fiber, and for medicine. Some of the newer growing industries are the CBD for medicinal purpose and things like bioplastics. So overall, hemp has a potential of 25,000 end uses. Rodale Institute was one of 16 organizations to be able to be a part of the Pennsylvania Department of Ag Industrial Hemp Pilot Program starting in 2017. And we really wanted to take this crop and just treat it like another crop that can be incorporated into a farmer's already existing plan to improve their agroecosystem diversity, mitigate climate degradation, and potentially and hopefully improve farmer income. And so our main objectives were to use industrial hemp as a dual weed suppression cover crop and double as a cash crop. We know a lot of our weed suppression cover crops don't have very high value as a cash crop, but we know that industrial hemp has the potential to do so. We also thought what we knew about hemp, we know that it can grow pretty tall and produce a lot of biomass. We also know that the root biomass below ground can be just as extensive as the above ground biomass, so we thought it also had the potential to break up compaction, and because of its natural ability to suppress weeds, that we could actually use it in a complete no-till system. What we typically practice on the farm is rotational no-till system, and so talk about that for a second. We know that continuous organic no-till is a challenge. I mean, with organic farming, when we're not using herbicides to fight our weeds, we're using usually increased tillage, but we try to find many ways to reduce that tillage, sometimes by using different pieces of equipment or incorporating years of pasture. But what we typically practice is rotational no-till, and this is what that looks like. So we'll usually use tillage to establish our cover crop so that we're getting that good seed-to-soil contact, but we're going to use our roller crimper to terminate the cover crop and directly plant our cash crop behind. So zoom in on that for a second. The roller crimper in the front, for those of you who have not seen one, you see those chevron-shaped ridges on the roller, and that's producing two breaks in the stem, ensuring termination of the cover crop, and then we're directly seeding behind. So it's kind of a, you know, very seamless process, and so it's usually what you would see. Let me see. Yes, I have it. So this is our typical rotation. This is a rotation that we've been practicing. We're most famous for our farming systems trial. Was established in 1981, and that's the longest running side-by-side comparison of organic and conventional grain cropping in North America. And so we've been practicing this rotation in that trial since. And so it looks something like this, and normally you would have, you would have soybean planted into the rolled rye and corn planted into the rolled vetch. But you're still using tillage to establish rye, vetch, and wheat in this rotation. So two options, including hemp, into this rotation. You can replace oats with hemp in this system, or you could replace corn. We know that as of right now, we're comparing hemp to corn as the way it grows. We know that's not accurate. We still have a lot to learn about what hemp's doing to our soil. But we chose option number one to replace oats. This is kind of was simple for us as we try to get farmers and help farmers transition from conventional to organic. Oats is often a hard sell to do organically, so including hemp or replacing oats with hemp seemed pretty simple for us. And in this case, incorporating hemp in the rotation, you would not need to use tillage to establish rye. And that's the hope. So experimental design, we have a simple variety trial, trying to get as many varieties as we can from mainly Europe and Canada, countries who've never stopped growing it, and seeing how they perform here. And then our weed suppression trial, this is that rotation that I mentioned previously. And so this is using hemp as a dual weed suppression cover crop and cash crop. I'm going to zoom in on this. The first year really provided a beautiful visual for us, where you can see we're comparing it to sorghum Sudan grass, because sorghum Sudan grass is often used in this way as a weed suppression cover crop. And so you can see the sorghum there on the left and the hemp there on the right. In the center there, that's our fallow plots. And so that's your ragweed, your pigweed, your lamb's quarter. That's what it would look like if you didn't have that hemp and sorghum there. And to kind of take you into the hemp forest, also very beautiful, you can see here as we're sampling, there are no weeds on the forest floor. So that's was pretty exciting for us. For data collection, we're looking at typical varietal data, biomass, height, content, yield, and nutrient mineral data. We're looking at both soil, physical, and chemical properties at this time. We want to see how much hemp is taking out of the soil and also how it's affecting the physical properties, see if we can reduce compaction and maybe use it as a complete no-till crop. And then also weed suppression data. We're looking at weed density in every season, so also during the other cash crops. But also conducting weed seed bank studies to see if there's a long-term suppression effect by incorporating hemp into your rotation. So you can see here our fiber variety that we got in year one outperformed in height and biomass and was comparative to the sorghum Sudan grass at very high biomass. So we were really happy about that, and that was as expected. Unfortunately, starting this program and working with the legality of it all, we couldn't get access to that great variety in year two. We did save seed from year one, but it did not germinate in year two. We know there was a lot of issues. It ended up sitting in customs for 4 months before we got it in year one, so we have no idea the storage conditions, so that could definitely have played a role, and that's still happening to this day. Even though it is now legal, we're still having trouble getting seed on time. And so here, the fiber variety we ended up getting, we got it a few weeks late. As you can see, we didn't have our first measurement there, so that could play a role. Also, we know that last year was a super wet year, so there could be a lot of factors there. But overall, we had lower height and lower biomass in year two. Looking at the plant tissue, I really just want to point out here with nitrogen, so it's pretty clear, and this is as expected, that it's taking up a lot of nitrogen. And so hemp is going to be a really heavy nitrogen feeder. And so really trying to better understand that as we move forward. Also, the cadmium and lead, we are finding evidence of that in the hemp and not in the sorghum. And that was expected as well. We know hemp is used as a bioremediator. But what's really interesting in our soil samples, we have no level, 0% of lead and cadmium in our soil, yet we're finding it in the tissue. So that means it's mining for it and it's accumulating it. And so we're waiting on the grain and fiber results to see where it's accumulating these metals. We're hoping this is just the leaf tissue, so we're hoping it's not moving past that. So we'll continue to monitor the movement of those heavy metals. Grain yields, you can see here on the right is our grain variety, so it was as expected to have more grain in your grain variety. You can see here in our fiber variety you had reduced grain yield, so as expected, it's good. As we get these varietals, we're told what they're grown for. However, we have no idea how they're going to grow here, so it's still really important to track these and pay attention very closely to the different varietals. And then also pay attention to timing. You know, they'll tell you that this is an 80 to 100 day, harvest, and it's completely off. They were bred to grow in different areas of Europe and Canada, and so we really have to work on creating our own varietals and domestic varieties to see and to better track these things. For weed suppression, I looked at weed density at both mid-season and at harvest. Harvest was 85 days in our first year. And so you could see here that both at mid-season and at harvest, you have a reduction in your hemp and sorghum plots of foxtail, ragweed, and pigweed. And actually for ragweed, hemp did a better job of suppressing than sorghum Sudan grass. You're seeing the same thing here at harvest. In year two, where we rolled down our rye cover crop, established both by tillage on half the field and without tillage on the other half of the field, and our soybeans were planted directly behind, you can see the darker bars, same colors as before, as your tilled rye areas, and your lighter colors are your no-till rye areas, so a complete no-till system. You can see there are some increase in your no-till system, but these densities aren't concerning, and neither are the species at the densities they were found. So overall, we weren't finding any significant differences between your complete no-till and your rotational no-till system in terms of weed density. But one thing you might notice is that there was no presence of pigweed, ragweed, or lamb's quarter. And so we're going to continue to track that, and it could be the seasonality and things, but these were sampled at the same time as they were in year one, and we did not find those weeds in these fields in year two. I just want to point out this plant because I'm sure you can see that they're very high levels in the no-till. For those of you, you probably all know. Pig smartweed is a Pennsylvania aquatic plant. I think that just gives you an idea of how wet last year really was in the Northeast. And so we're not too concerned about it. That's just what smartweed does. So we'll continue to monitor it, but I think it was just, it could have a little bit to do with our complete no-till plot, maybe holding on to some more water. So we'll have to look a little bit more into that and water infiltration and things like that. But we're not too concerned about that being a problem weed in the future. Also in those soybean fields, we saw low weed pressure overall, but we also saw some record-breaking soybean yields, and so we're really excited about that. This white line here is the national average last year, and you could see that our yields were well above the national average in that field, and then also compared to other fields on our farm, we were well above those yields as well in the plots where we had sorghum and hemp. And we're in year three now, so it's wheat this year. And so I just threw this crop up here. I don't have any more information on the weeds in wheat right now, but we did just harvest last week, and the yields were also above last year's average. So overall, we saw that the five varieties are producing higher biomass and height, which is what we want if we're using them as a weed suppression cover crop. Hemp mines, and it can accumulate heavy metals in their tissues, so being able to track that and make sure that we're not affecting the product end use. Overall, hemp suppressed foxtail and ragweed better than Sudan grass. And soybean and wheat yields were increased following hemp. And weed pressure was reduced. We found evidence that hemp is a viable weed suppression cover crop that is of higher value than something like sorghum Sudan grass. And that's the whole next step. So we haven't worked a lot with the economics. Processing is still very behind. So we're hoping to have those economic numbers for you next year. We know that we still have a lot to work on this. Like I said, we know this is a historically old crop, but really it's really new for us. Growing it here, we're missing 80 years of data, and there really is very poor record of it being grown before. And so we know we need to test more varieties and start working on some domestic varieties for industrial use. We need to play with things like planting date, seeding rate, spacing, all of those things to maximize their use for their intended purpose or end product. For example, our five varieties should have more fiber than our seed varieties, so just working out all of those logistics. We want to learn a little bit more about these dual-purpose varieties. One thing that's so great about hemp is that it has so many uses, so if we can use this crop for many uses out of one harvest, we want to be able to do that. So working more with those varieties and being able to harvest them, that's the challenge right now, is being able to harvest for both uses. We want to make sure that we're expanding our research to different soils. We have very limited knowledge of where these varieties are being grown, and so moving that around. And then looking at that chart, looking at the nitrogen and the metals, just really tracking that better. So this year we set up a nutrient management trial to mainly track nitrogen. So we really want to look at how much, and we want to make sure that we're growing hemp responsibly and that we're using this to increase farmer income. And so we're looking at this not only to create more of a nitrogen budget for hemp, but also to make sure that farmers aren't spending additional money on nitrogen fertilizers when there already is an increased crop cost when trying to grow hemp. And then also moving around and repeating this weed suppression trial. Of course, we were really excited about the results with the reduced weed pressure and increased yields, but you know, as scientists, when something goes really well, you don't believe it, so we're going to do it again and again and again. We also are taking part in some of the CBD research. There is a lot. That's the cool thing right now. But so we didn't want to completely ignore it. But for logistics and trying to maintain it as feminized, we moved it to a different site at our Pocono Organics location at the Pocono Raceway. It's managed by our staff at the Rodale Institute, and we're also working with Charlotte's Web for production of CBD hemp at the Pocono location. And then we're also using our veteran farmer training program to be able to keep up with the labor that's involved with the CBD type of production. It's more hand harvest and hand labor, so using this really awesome program that we've developed to be able to accomplish that. I just want to thank all of our sponsors for this research. At this time, it's still very new, and there's not a lot of funding or grants available for it, so having these companies excited about the work we're doing and support it is essential. So thank you. Thank you.